Bite. My name's Gavin Clark. I'm software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog.
And in this show, Windows 7 is coming in time for Christmas 2009, but not for school kids. Is Microsoft missing out on the Mac generation again? Summer codes coming from Microsoft. There's going to be a lot of beta code floating around in the next few months. We're going to tell you what's coming and why you need to be paying attention to that. And finally, welcome to the new face of embedded Windows. Nope, it's not Windows CE. It's not even Windows Mobile. It's Shellan. We'll tell you some more about that. So, MJ, Windows 7, Steven Sinofsky, he finally admitted that Windows 7 is coming this year and let go of the 2010 official ship date, didn't they?
Yeah. Wow, talk about something long overdue. But, you know, what to me was kind of interesting is still we have all the caveats, of course. I guess they have to do that, right?
Yeah.
It's Windows 7's going to RTM probably 3 months from now if everything still looks as good as it does now, unless we find any bugs or any other giant things happen.
Yeah.
So it's looking like August, basically.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting because based on the Windows XP ship dates, that took about 3 months between release to manufacturing and product getting in the marketplace, which would suggest that you're looking at Windows 7 going on PCs by about October, which I think is interesting, as you recently pointed out, that means Microsoft, okay, they hit the Christmas shopping season, but they missed the back-to-school shopping season, which is important for them, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm really surprised about that, actually, Gavin. I thought maybe because they had been showing the OEMs the code all the way along, and you know, the fact that Windows 7 really isn't a huge upgrade compared to how Windows XP and Vista were to each other, you know, like a lot of things didn't change. Driver model's not changing this time. So I was thinking OEMs might be able to get the code preloaded and tested on new machines faster than October. But that's not what we're hearing. And, you know, if they can't, they are missing a really important market to Microsoft, which is the back-to-school market. Because as we know and have seen in the case of Apple, you got to catch the users young and kind of get their mind share, you know, when they're in middle school, high school, college. So that market's very, very important to Microsoft if they want to keep the Windows brand in front of people who are becoming the future IT professionals of tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely.
So my guess is actually because of past patterns, I'm guessing that Microsoft actually is either going to RTM earlier than they're telling us and they're going to have it ready for back to school, or the PC makers are going to be able to turn it around really quick and they're going to have it ready for back to school, and it's going to be one of these surprise, we're ready early kind of moments.
Yeah, I would agree. It would seem that Windows 7 is pretty much done. Steven Sinofsky is kind of playing a bizarre kind of mind game with people. You're right. I mean, they have to cover their asses. They put a lot of corporate caveats in, you know, if this happens and we're going to, you know, and that happens, then this may happen. But realistically speaking, from what you've seen of Windows 7 so far, it's essentially done. There's not much left to do. So, yeah, you know, you could theoretically get this thing out into the channel quicker than 3 months. Although, having said that, Acer, which is the world's joint second largest PC maker, actually came out last month and said Windows 7 is going to be available on October the 23rd. And Acer has been pretty reliable in its dates. They seem to be somewhat of a loose cannon amongst the OEM channel when it comes to dealing with Microsoft. So, yeah, so they've said October the 23rd, which, again, misses that kind of crucial back-to-school August-September shopping season.
Yeah. You know, the other part we don't know is, as we might remember back from Vista, Microsoft can and has in the past made versions of Windows available in waves.
Yeah.
Remember when Vista RTM'd, right away they made the code available for download to volume licensees. They didn't have to wait until January of the following year. So, you know, what we might be hearing about and not really fully realizing yet is Microsoft's going to make this thing available in waves. Like, maybe the actual quote launch, like the big official party launch, won't even be till November. But you know, I think volume licensees are going to get it earlier, and maybe even like some of the people who are going to carry it on back to school, like netbook kind of PCs, will get it before the you know, full fledged laptop vendors. I don't know. I'm just wondering if that's why we're hearing all these possible dates, and it's not all adding up yet.
I think you're right. I mean, the netbook audience was definitely a kind of a key segment for them. I think what as you were saying, I was thinking that they've got to look for a new distribution mechanism, because obviously when you're dealing with OEMs, there's processes and channels and procedures, and maybe 3 months is the typical process for getting this thing out there. So you have to look to ways to speed it up, and maybe that is taking a more wave-based approach, or making Windows 7 available for downloads in more cases, or just prioritizing certain targets rather than going from the big broad front announcement. Although, having said that, as we all know, the Vista kind of staged availability was more a matter of necessity than pragmatic or like visionary thinking, because the thing had slipped so far already, and they were kind of committed to a 2006 shipment date. So they had to get it in under the wire, which is what they did with that kind of staggered kind of shipment model.
Yeah. I think, you know, even though they are not under that exact same kind of gun with Windows 7, they are under a gun of another kind, because if you look at their messaging now, they never talk about Vista anymore, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, yeah, they're still selling it, and you know, they're still promoting it to some small degree, but you just never hear them mention Vista. And I think they just know, like, come on, let's hurry up and get Windows 7 out there, because Vista has just been like this giant sucking sound, and we just want to make that go away, you know? The other date I'm really interested in, and we still haven't heard anything, is, you know, when are they going to introduce that genuine upgrade, or what do they call that? No, the guaranteed upgrade program that they traditionally do, where if you buy, say you buy a Vista PC this summer, you'll be guaranteed a free automatic upgrade to Windows 7 when it comes out. The rumored date's July 1 on that, but it's something they don't want to talk about still, because it's going to cut into Vista sales even more.
Yeah. I'm not sure what they're doing on that. Also, we saw that on the was it the release candidate, you're going to get a year's worth of use out of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
For Windows 7, which I was trying to do some research and I couldn't pin it down. Maybe you can answer this, MJ. Is a year's worth of use on a release candidate, is that unprecedented, or is that typical from Microsoft?
That's a really good question. I don't know. It seems really long to me. I know they traditionally give you you know, they give you quite a bit of leeway, because they know, especially for business users, you need a little bit longer opportunity to test it and make sure all your line of business apps work and everything else works. So you may need it for a year once you get that release candidate. But I'm not sure if that's the longest one they've ever had. It could be, though.
It seems somehow, again, there's not much to really test with Windows 7. It would seem to me it's a way of getting people on the operating system and then, you know, getting really used to it, and kind of a soft upgrade. Then come next June, the license expires, and what are you going to do? You've come to rely on this thing for more than a year. Then you've pretty much got to pay for the full operating system. So it's kind of like, to your point about introducing Windows 7 in waves, with this kind of like extended period of time on the release candidate, it's kind of, they've already introduced the operating system. It's just by next summer, people start paying, and you know, the upgrades already start happening. So in a sense, Windows 7 is already among us. It's already here.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. I think it's just a matter of finishing it up now and putting the last bit of polish on it and getting it out there. So another thing that has been in the news quite a bit recently, Gavin, is all these new and soon to be released betas of different Microsoft products that a lot of them are going to be coming in June and July, or even one of them we're going to talk about here in May. So it's going to be an interesting and busy summer for people who like to beta test Microsoft software. First, we've got Visual Studio 2010, the beta one, is expected, maybe even here in late May. Then that's going to be followed up by the Office 2010 Community Technology Preview, which is an invitation-only preview that's going to go out to several thousand users. That's going to include all of the Office Suite products that used to be known as Office 14, plus the backend suite, all the things in the SharePoint server family, and also these new Office web apps, which are the web-based versions of a number of the Office apps like Word, PowerPoint, and Excel. And to top it all off, we're going to see a test build of Kilimanjaro, which is the next version of SQL Server, now known officially as SQL Server 2008 R2. So we've got a lot of different things coming in the pipeline that have been only out in very private and small selected tests up until now. And I'm for one, I'm really anxious to see Office because it's running late, they're running behind schedule, and the little bits I've been able to get from people suggest it's not a big upgrade.
What can they do to Office that hasn't been done already?
Yeah, I mean the piece that everyone seems most interested in is this Office web apps piece because they have never done that before, had web-based versions of their own apps. But you know, as far as the rest of the Office suite, yeah, they can add a few more ribbons to pieces and you know have an enhancement to OneNote or a couple new features in Word, but it's not going to be anything like show-stopping, I don't think.
I think the market here is for Microsoft to lose. It was interesting that late last month, OpenOffice 3.1 was finally released after its own set of delays, and one of our guys did a review on it. And he said there'd been a significant step forward in the features, the speed, some basic things that they'd been missing for ages. And in a sense, that's what people kind of want from their Office suite. They want it to do the basics, but do it very well. And Microsoft continually tries to push the envelope in terms of integration with all this other stuff like SQL Server and SharePoint. But in a way, that's not where is not where the majority of Office users are. Only these real kind of like high-end power users are properly in that segment.
Yeah. I mean, I've been most interested in kind of keeping tabs on the SharePoint 2010 stuff because whenever I've heard people talk about what's coming in Office 14, they always say, "Well, the biggest changes are going to come in SharePoint." And for readers, I should say, not readers, for listeners who don't really know what SharePoint is, because Microsoft makes it really complicated to understand what SharePoint is, it's a whole like backend server set of products. There's a search server, there's a collaboration server. They're basically all the backend things that users do, enterprise content management and all that. It's all packaged into something that sounds like it's one thing called SharePoint Server. And we know a little bit after TechEd, which happened here in Los Angeles in mid-May. We know a little bit more about what's coming in SharePoint 2010. We know for one, it's only going to be a 64-bit only release, and it's going to be really tied into SQL Server. It's pretty much you're going to need SQL Server to run SharePoint. And we know a few other little tidbits, like they're going to rename and reposition Groove, their online-offline synchronization tool, as SharePoint Workspace Manager, and that's going to be part of one of the Office SKUs. We know, what else do we know? We know that they're no longer going to support Internet Explorer 6, which makes a lot of sense because they're trying to wean people away from that now. And they're going to have some new search capabilities, something called faceted search, which I don't know anything more about other than the name, pretty much.
Was this the stuff they bought from Fast, or is this something different?
This is something different. This is fa There's also going to be a new version of fast search for SharePoint too as part of the release. So there's a lot of stuff coming in it. And then the overriding thing I keep hearing is there's going to be online synchronization capability in SharePoint, which if that is true is a pretty big deal, or that may just be a reference to Groove, the Groove client. So there's a lot of stuff coming there. Again, like you're saying though, these are features that mostly appeal to like enterprise customers. They're really not things for small businesses or even some medium-sized businesses who are cash-strapped right now and not really thinking about upgrading their office infrastructure in the middle of this economic downturn.
something talking about big ticket items and extending from Kilimanjaro is Madison, which is going to have a lot of people interested. It's the data appliance that's coming, that's going to be a subset of Kilimanjaro, the next version of SQL Server. A large part of it is going to be based on technology they bought from a company called Data Allegro, which itself had an appliance. And so you're talking here SQL Server. Data Allegro's product was based on dual socket servers with various CPUs, fiber channel connection, Dell hardware. And it would cost about 1.1 million, I think, for about 15 terabytes worth of storage on this machine. So Data Allegro used to push out some really expensive machines.
Wow.
Now, switching over to what's going on here with Madison, it's the same ballpark. Data Allegro is in there. Only Microsoft is working with Bull, Dell, EMC, HP, and Unisys, all of which are past masters in kind of BI storage mainframes. So they're cooking up something here that I think is going to see it go more head to head against Oracle, in terms of information appliances and information serving, especially given Oracle's now interested in, well, buying some of the Sun hardware, which I think is also going to go to beefing up its own appliance strategy. So, and I believe you're going to be getting an early preview of Madison. That's going to be coming out, I think the date was July. So again, there's a lot of beefy code going to be coming out from Microsoft this summer. Is it the right timing? I don't know, considering the state of the economy. But you know the way these product cycles work. Microsoft was probably committed way before the economy tanked.
I think another point that's valid to bring up here. I just was reading recently. Business Week had actually a very good article about why Google Apps isn't really selling that well. So, it's like, people keep saying, yeah, but everybody wants to move to the cloud with their office stuff, and everybody wants to do this, and everyone wants to do that. Well, as you know how I always think about this, Gavin, I always see like not exactly everybody, right? It's like, Google is finding it's hard to sell into this market. I think way harder than they thought it was going to be. I think they just saw, hey, we're going to offer $50 per user, and everyone's going to jump. But a lot of business users, even small business users, are still leery of making their stuff 100% cloud dependent. And as we've seen recently with outages, with Google, with Gmail, people are worried because, if you have your corporate data in stored in the cloud and it goes down, then what?
Exactly.
You're out of business today.
Precisely. I think what we're looking at now is not only are things like Google Docs and spreadsheets experiencing the all too predictable backlash as the initial hype is burned off, but yeah, I mean systems are going out, and what you're going to see is the enterprise landscape will become even more fragmented, not less fragmented, as now you've got another bucket of technology added into the fabric. So you'll have Office along with Google in certain parts of a company, as well as other users using Google Docs. But yeah, the revolution, the cloud revolution for online docs, that's not going to happen, I don't think. Well, not going to happen.
I mean, I it's funny when Microsoft first came out with software plus services, everyone's like, oh, that's such a namby idea, right? Like, it's like they don't want to commit to the cloud, and people want to move to the cloud. And now it's like, well, it's actually looking like kind of a smart idea because they're actually letting people have a choice. You can have some in the cloud and some not in the cloud, or you can have it all in the cloud, or you can have none of it in the cloud. And in hindsight, it looks like Microsoft really had their ideas together, but I'm not so sure they came in that way, but it ended up making them look good.
Well, then you would say that because you're so pro Microsoft, MJ. We know.
I think it's an interesting. I always liked software plus services. Like I always thought that actually makes sense, even though people think it's just Microsoft protecting their turf. Which I will say there was a big part of that too in there. But in the end, it's they're kind of doing what everybody else is gravitating towards, which is giving people more choices.
There you go. Mary Jo, fully sponsored by Microsoft.
Man, if I could get a kickback on that, it'd be awesome. But
It'd be
I
awesome. Yeah. So something else I find fascinating, and this is Microsoft's embedded strategy. I know we want to talk about that. Now, I covered Windows CE when it first launched years ago, and then Microsoft seemed to take a step back and they create these other embedded operating systems. So I've lost count of how many versions of Windows Embedded we have, how many there have been, how many have been rebranded versions of something else, and now we've got this other thing called it Shellan, which you
Yes.
tell me is a lake. Up in near Microsoft's headquarters. What are they doing now? And is Shellan just another version of Windows CE, or is it something really different?
Yeah, you're not alone in being confused, and Microsoft sure is not helping the matter by trying to pretend like all these brands don't really matter to people and that people don't really need to worry about what's underneath this or what version number that is. I disagree because I think the developers especially really need to understand this. So here's why it's so confusing. They had the thing that you're describing, which you and I both covered because we're dinosaurs in this business, called Windows CE. But there is nothing called Windows CE anymore in Microsoft terminology. Now there is this thing called Windows Embedded Compact. That's what Windows CE is now. So they're up to ver but except that anything introduced before now is still known as Windows Embedded CE. So there's a Windows Embedded CE 4, 5, and 6. Those are the most recent versions. And all of these versions of CE underlie a lot of different technologies and products from Microsoft and from other companies too, who want to build on top of an embedded operating system. So what a lot of people don't know is Windows Mobile is actually built on top of Windows CE. Microsoft does its best to keep that hidden. They don't think people need to know that, and they don't want to be public about that. But Windows Mobile 6.5, which is coming out this fall, is actually built on Windows Embedded CE 5.2. If you're still following along here.
I've got my eyes shut. I'm focusing on your words.
But the thing they showed at TechEd is called Shellan. The code name is Shellan. It's Windows Compact next version. No, Windows, I can't even say it right myself, even though I have been trying to figure this out. Windows Embedded Compact next is Shellan. But if you're using the old terminology, you could call it Windows Embedded CE 7. So what's important to know about Shellan is that's probably not what's in Windows Mobile 7. That would make too much sense, right? You'd have 7 and 7. No. Nope. Shellan is the version of the embedded operating system that's after Windows Mobile 7, which is very interesting because it means they're starting to talk about and show off something that's after Windows Mobile 7. And they showed it off under NDA at TechEd. I still haven't found anybody who's seen it, at least who will talk about it. But I have a feeling Shellan is going to be the operating system not just for phones from Microsoft, but for some other portable media kind of devices that we don't know about yet.
So is Shellan is it going to go on all Windows mobile and embedded devices, or is it going to continue with this kind of like this kind of like whole farrago of like lots of different operating systems for embedded, all with different names and version numbers?
I know it is so confusing. I'm laughing because it's just like, man, it's such a morass, you know? My understanding is they're trying to keep everything in sync. So all Windows Mobile 6.5 phones are going to be based on Windows Embedded 5.2. Like that's going to be everything. Like that whole family will be like that. Then whenever Windows Mobile 7 comes out, I believe that will be based on Windows Embedded 6. But Microsoft won't confirm that. They won't deny it. They won't comment on it because they won't comment on anything about Windows Mobile 7, which, by the way, is due next year. It's not like it's some way, way out thing like a Midori or something. It's like right here, but they won't talk about it.
Now, this is where they kind of lose, I feel, to Linux when it comes to mobile, because you basically have one Linux kernel that's slightly modified for mobile, but everyone knows what they're dealing with. But Microsoft is why it just has to keep confusing the situation, and not only is his code not available for customization and modification, but nobody can tell you really which version of Windows Mobile they're using, or CE or whatever. Or, you have to go through these hoops and mazes to actually find the version of Windows you need or want. Now, why? What is this? Is it just branding gone crazy, or does the Windows development train just move in this kind of crazy way where it's always under development and it can never be completed, finished, f considered finished?
I think the branding answer is more the answer. I remember a couple months back they were trying to get everybody to start calling Windows mobile phones just Windows phones. And I think Microsoft just wants to take the geekiness away from these consumer-facing platforms. So like they don't want people to know it's Windows embedded on top of, underneath Windows Mobile, which has a different version number from the Windows that you're connecting it to. They just want people not to even know any of that. They want it to all look seamless and act like the version numbers don't matter, which again, that's great if you're a consumer and it makes things kind of easy, except you do need to know what version you're on a lot of times. Like on Windows, you need to know what version you're on when you're buying software or you're downloading an app or whatever. And they're in the same boat on Windows Mobile, even though they don't want to think they're in that boat.
I think it, Sun has suffered from some of this on Java. They're so caught up on what's the name of the version of Java that we present to the consumer. But the reality is, the consumer doesn't care. They don't even know what software is on their machine, let alone who made it. It only matters to the geeks who build the code. So therefore, Microsoft should be honest, very honest with the geeks. It should be get as techy as it wants to, and forget any pretense to this rebranding that's going to appeal to everyone, because there's two audiences. Here, there's the developers who build, and there's the end user consumer who just doesn't care. I mean, you see the ads for the Ford cars on TV, for the Sync Fusion or whatever it is, and it's like, those ads have been modified slowly over time. It used to say Ford, I think it was like powered by Microsoft Sync, and now it's just, now they kind of genericized it and talk about your voice activated technology. Clearly, the Microsoft brand w was not enough to make people buy this Ford car. What, having said all that, what mood is Steve Ballmer this week? And let's run through the options. We've got frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and monkey boy. So, MJ, what mood is Steve Ballmer, Microsoft CEO, in this week?
I'm gonna go with all business this week,
And why
and
is
the
that?
reason I'm going to go with that is in the much publicized move, Microsoft actually started raising some debt this week, $3 billion worth, which I think you and I were talking earlier. It's not that big a drop in the bucket for Microsoft to try
No.
to raise $3 billion because they have 20 plus billion in cash on hand at any given time. And a lot of people were kind of overreacting, I think, to Microsoft doing this. But, Microsoft is all about business these days. They're all about cost cutting and layoffs and saving money and doing stock buyback and kind of cleaning house and getting their house in order to keep Wall Street happy. So I'm going to go with all business there.
Well, I think so. It's interesting. 3 billion is just over one quarter's worth of revenue for Microsoft. And I think you raised the interesting point that there's talking conspiracy theories that 3 billion's been raised to offset any cost that Microsoft might have faced or was probably facing from a fine, a hefty fine coming from the EU, which pretty much most people are expecting for antitrust violations.
That was my total guess when I heard they were raising 3 billion. I was like, oh, I bet that's for the EU fine that they can't publicly acknowledge that is coming because they don't want to look like they've lost that case. But I'm sure they're feeling what everybody else is, that the EU is going to come down hard on them around the browser bundling case and definitely fine them.
And as you know, I mean, if that money's going to come from somewhere, and if it doesn't come from a loan, then it's going to come out of one quarter's or two quarter's revenue figures, which is going to show, that's going to look bad in front of Wall Street. So you might as well, it's kind of, I feel it's kind of a way of kind of keeping that cost off books in some kind of way.
Yep, I think that's a really plausible explanation because it's obvious they're not getting that money to buy Yahoo or something. I mean, they're number one, it's not enough money. Number two, they don't want to buy Yahoo anymore, supposedly. And
Or
that whole
SAP, if something's been said.
SAP, yeah, that rumor was like, come on, guys, they decided not to do that too. And do they need them? Is that really
Yeah.
what they're spending money on? I don't
I
know.
know. And that was just the desperate reach of people just putting two and two together and getting six or something. Well, that's it for another show. My name's Gim Clark. I'm software editor of The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, all about Microsoft Blogger at ZDNet. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.